Hello, friends. Welcome to the WFO Life Podcast. Today, we've got a random show, but really centered around COVID-19. We covered all kinds of aspects of the COVID-19 experience, if you will. We talked about some of the medical aspects. We talked about some of the social aspects. And we talked about statistics and maybe some of the misinformation that's going on out there. We sprinkled in some Stoic philosophy. And overall, I think this was a great episode, very timely, and hopefully encouraging to everyone out there. So without further ado, it's time for the bumper music. Welcome to the WFO Life Podcast. Buckle up for interviews, insights, and practical discussions, and the occasional intellectual oddity, all designed to help you master self, master craft, and accomplish any life mission. And we're live. Good afternoon, Chris. How are you today?
Doing good. Can't complain. Weather's good. People are healthy around the house, so not a lot to complain about besides what everybody else complains about these days.
So in the story bunker, everything is okay, no COVID-19. Anybody you know close by or anything that's been a problem?
Not really. Our county has been, you know, kind of rough, but it's kind of a sprawling county / suburb of Philadelphia. So I think we're the second highest number of cases. I don't know if it's in Pennsylvania. I know it's in the Philly area. So obviously Philadelphia County proper has the most cases, but I think we're second. So we probably we're pushing 3,000 cases in just in our county. So a little nuts, but we only go out, maybe once a week. I'll go out or my wife will go out. We'll alternate and we try to, just be safe. And so we've been doing this for, going on a month now, and thankfully, no infections yet. So,
yeah, very good. Well, yeah. And so I live in Corpus Christi, our hometown, and there's, Houston area has the most cases in Texas, and then Dallas is the other big hub. So you got to get to Corpus, you got to sort of go out of your way. From what I understand, every morning we do a little bit of a routine with my doctors and the staff that I work with. We go through the local numbers, how many cases, things like that. And in our area, there's really not a lot of cases, and it really hasn't spiked. It's just been this slow, indolent, a few more every day kind of thing. And in fact, the only cases that we've had in the area that have been very sick or even in the hospital have been that were imported from people traveling, I think they said from Waco. And then also from Houston, we had people that were maybe on business trips and whatever, and they brought back COVID-19 with them. So far in my community, it's been sort of a slow process. And maybe as we get rolling this morning, we can kind of cover kind of some thoughts on all of that. But I just wondered what the situation was like. You got, you're like me. I've got the kids are here at the farm. I spend part of my time virtually working, treating patients by telemedicine, and I spend part of my time in the clinic, and then researching, what we need to be doing next. But it's interesting having the kids here all day. They're, they do a 3-4 hours worth of work, and then they're, farting around the house doing their thing and having fun. And it's an interesting time, but also very locked down, very, all the social things we would normally do just aren't there right now.
Yeah, I really feel for people that are kids that are seniors in high school, even maybe ending middle school, some areas there's middle schools that feed to different high schools. And so, kind of if you're ending high school, ending middle school, maybe even ending elementary, and then the school year was cut short. I know here they've already called the whole school year. They're not going back to school at all. Wow. So, that pulling the plug like that, that's a mental hit early on in life. I mean, I was telling my oldest, who's 12 and understands things a little bit more, it's a challenge because, you think about most of the things that come up in your kid's life, you and or your wife has experienced before.
Right. Right.
But with something like this, I mean, this hasn't happened, you know, probably since the 1918 Spanish flu days, right? You know, where you're like in fear for your safety. But I know somebody we had on a few weeks ago, Jerome Dixon, who follows a lot of, you know, data when it comes to health and medicine, has sent me a lot of follow-on links. We'll probably have him on again. But it really seems like, although you hear these, you know, really heart-wrenching cases about, you know, even younger middle-aged people succumbing to the disease, I mean, as we go along, it really seems like the mortality rates are going to be more in line with the seasonal flu, even though because it's such a worldwide thing, you hear every single, you know, human interest story, you know, about the disease. I think that, you know, people, you know, kind of latch on to, maybe not in a good way.
You know, I think you're right about that. And I want to also echo what you're saying. I've actually run across patients of mine that are, you know, one of them's a senior in high school, came in, and basically they've already canceled their graduation, canceled their prom, all of their hoorah that they get as seniors, you know, that final walk and tall in the school because you're the big man on campus, all of that stuff is over. In this case, one of the kids I talked to played on my daughter's a freshman, but played on the, you know, the soccer team, and they had actually made the playoffs, and that's all gone. It's over. They didn't, you know, it was all for naught, you know, it was her senior year, but all that's over, you know, it's not going to happen. And it's starting to hit a lot of them that I'm just going to sort of fade into the sunset here. You know, as a senior, I'm not going to have some closure with the high school. I'm not going to have closure with my friends. That's a strange thing. It hit me too. It's funny that you brought that up, because it hit me the same way when this patient was talking to me the other day. She was generally sad about that, and that something, you know, just, it's just not going to be there. All those things that maybe, you know, as we were growing up, we went to graduations of older siblings or friends, or, you know, we used to go into graduations, right? And you're just kind of celebrating people. And I think a lot of these folks are just sort of drifting off into the world, you know, and they're just sent off, you know?
Well, yeah. And I wonder, you know, not only from the sports side, but maybe even academically, I mean, some kids that were, you know, waiting to see if they graduated in the top 5 or 10% of the class, or, you know, being recruited for more spring and, you know, and going to summer sports like baseball, softball, things like that. I mean, if you were on the bubble for some of those things, I mean, you're kind of, you know,
yeah,
screwed in a way.
Still,
you know,
still,
I mean,
on the bubble.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a bunch of them that maybe could have squeezed in there are gonna have to be walk-ons, and
yeah, now you're on a raft. You're on a bubble and a raft, you know, because now you're, when you get out of the pipeline, you're outside the pipeline for sports and things like that. It's a little more difficult to get back in. It's not impossible. And I think, you know, one of the things on the bright side is that I think that a lot of systems, if you look at sports, if you look at school, everything's changing and adapting to this. They're just saying, well, this isn't optimal, but we'll adapt and do something with that. And I think that's, you know, just the nature of what humans are going to do.
Yeah, one of the things that, you know, you hear it as a cliche, but I know I've observed it both in times like this, and especially being deployed in the military or be separated from family. They say that, tough times don't necessarily always build character, but they do reveal character. You know, you see what people are made out of when, you know, things happen that are not good, out of your control. Right. And I think it's interesting because, you know, people are, both kids and adults, are losing outlets that they normally would have. I mean, there's a lot of people don't realize how much comfort they take in being able to go sit in Starbucks and, you know, have a coffee, or, you know, go to a bar and have a pint, or even go to dinner with your family. And I mean, right, those are key, you know, social, you know, and mental stress relievers that, if you don't have it, I mean, you really have to go to your base of things, whether that be religion or philosophy or exercise. If you don't have, you know, a good base to who you are, and I think we're going to talk about some of that today in our random show, you know, things like Stoic philosophy, you know, if you don't have any type of religion, You know, it's tough when you don't have some kind of core, you know, something that centers you, that you can go to, kind of your citadel, if you will. And like I saw, like I mentioned a few minutes ago about being deployed, I mean, you see people that just fall apart, honestly. And then they you know, there's a joke that goes with that, too, when you're deployed or if you get stationed outside the continental U.S., they say, you know, you either find the church, you find the gym, or you find the bottle, you know, right. You know, and so, and unfortunately, you know, you can have good things that come out of it or dark things, you know, depending on which way you choose
to go. Yeah. Well, I definitely think you hit on something there. You know, we've flirted with Stoic topics before. I think it's been a theme we've covered on the WFO Live podcast. I know one of our earliest episodes, I think it was episode 2, it was something like dealing with a-holes or something. It was kind of a strangely, name of that post was a little bit strange. But the reality is, if a person will go back and listen to that, it was really an introductory to Stoic philosophy. I'm amazed because I'll be real honest with you. I'm getting a lot of people coming into clinic, and a lot of my telemedicine visits are people with anxiousness, mood disorders, and basically just adjustment problems due to being socially isolated, out of a job, all these kind of pressures, and sort of this unending cycle of news that we're hearing that's negative. And I think it's really, really, and I'm amazed at how many of them have never heard of Stoic philosophy. I mean, it's just like, you know, blank slate. And yeah. I really, really think we should do, and I know you're the guy to do this because you've done some deep reading on this. I really want to do a full-on topic on Stoicism and maybe why it matters for this here and now. I think it's important every day. Most of the Stoics would say this is important to live your life like this all the time, but especially when it hits the fan, so to speak, and life is not normal, that's when I think it matters the most. And so many people don't have Stoicism as even a tool in their toolbox. I think we need to make that an episode in the coming weeks. What do you say?
Yeah, absolutely. And the interesting thing about it is when you were talking, it reminded me that one of the, I guess, most well-known, you know, Stoic philosophers, who probably at the time, even to his death, probably didn't see himself as a philosopher, but, you know, the Roman king Marcus Aurelius, that has been portrayed in various movies. But now that I thought about it, one of the things he dealt with during his time, one of the many challenges he dealt with, is like there was a plague that was, you know, ravaging all over the world during his time in rule, and on top of warfare. And he eventually succumbed, I think, to that plague, is what historians think. But it's kind of interesting that he was one of the very well-known journalers and Stoic philosophers, and he used that to deal with the pressures of being a king, dealing with plagues, and you know, in a time of war. And so I think one of the good ways, or, you know, one of the ways I know I learn well is by having like a case study or a character study. So I think talking about Marcus Aurelius, and then I could think of a couple modern day you know, folks that were prisoners of war that really were students of Stoic philosophy, and whether they knew it at the time or not, it would be one of the things that kept them alive mentally and physically, because they kind of had that inner citadel to go to. Right. Even, and some of them were religious on top of it, but a lot of them, you know, in those practical applications, really drew on Stoic philosophy. So I think, you know, talking about the structure of it as we understand it, and then giving a couple case studies, would definitely be worth its own episode in the near future.
Excellent. Well, let's definitely pencil that in and try to make that. I think it's so pertinent right now. So I guess also let's go ahead and cover a few. I get a lot of questions. I have this Future Focus Health Network that I put content on. It's fairly new. It's kind of a place I've been trying to put all of my content and on the internet on. I have a large following of folks that follow me for medical purposes on that site. And I kind of been putting out a little bit of information about COVID-19. And everybody's kind of getting the blitzkrieg of daily news about that. But I do want to mention a few things that I think are really important that people keep in mind. One of those is that I think we need to be very careful in this environment, if you're in the highest risk category, I'm talking about the elderly, diabetics, autoimmune problems, congestive heart failure, COPD, that's that chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. These are the people that need to be protected in this environment. You know, we need family members to help them get groceries so they don't have to go out and about. We need to make sure that these people are the ones definitely trying to do these self-distancing. I also think that the whole long-term health, the other health issues, this is the thing that's getting me right now, Chris. I have patients that are coming in that have been to sort of private ERs, and they, they went in because they had shortness of breath. They had a respiratory complaint. But they didn't have a cough, they didn't have a fever, they're not. That's not why they were there, and they were turned away or told by a telemedicine visit, sorry, you can't come to the ER with that. Now, granted, these are private. This is a private ER, but the thing about that is, what's killing me is that we're overlooking the fact that everyone's so worried about COVID-19 that they're ignoring all the other reasons people have shortness of breath and chest pain and that go on every day.
Yeah, I mean, it's so, I think, typical. And I'm assuming, obviously, you know, hospitals and doctors are not immune to it. We get so sucked into, you know, what's the news of the day. And in this case, it's a medical topic that's, you know, sucking all the bandwidth out of social media and the news. So I could see how that would, I mean, it's scary, like you said. I mean, they would cloud a medical professional's opinion of things, because if you got somebody that's a diabetic, that's overweight, that's in their 60s, and they have a shortness of breath and, you know, lightheaded, and it's like, okay, you know, how about the more immediate life-threatening things that they could be experiencing, not COVID-19?
You know, yeah, because if COVID-19 wasn't there, the first thing you think, man, maybe this guy has a heart attack. Maybe he's had pulmonary embolus. Maybe he's got a cardiac arrhythmia. You know, on and on and on. You would think of so many other things, but now anytime somebody has any respiratory complaint, you know, they're worried about COVID-19.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I think one of the things, too, that hopefully will make some people wake up is I read something where people that were obese of almost any age group were almost put into the elderly high risk categories in terms of mortality and hospitalizations and intubations, that just obesity by itself, you know, even if you're 30 years old, was an indicator that you're likely to have an ICU visit or have a bad outcome for COVID-19, just as much as if you were 70 years old. I mean, it was similar numbers. And so hopefully that, you know, things like this will be a good wake up call for people that, you know, just allowed themselves, you know, life happens, they get, you know, into that obese category. It's like, you know, you're going to be a risk to society and to your family by something that's under your control. So hopefully in a good way, this will have people get out of some of their risk factors they can control.
Copy that. Yeah. Exactly. That is exactly the point I was trying to make. We have people that what's happening right now is because they're afraid to go outside, or because they're being told not to go outside, some people are using that as an excuse, and I think this is BS, but some people are using this as an excuse to not exercise, not go outside. Vitamin D, breath of fresh air. I mean, if you look at, I'm a cattle guy, right? I raise cattle on our farm. If you want animals to be sick, coop them up in a space where they don't have fresh air and sunlight. They will get sick. Yeah. Okay. Humans are the same way. We have to be out in the fresh air getting sunshine. Now, do you have to be sitting on top, you know, in somebody's face if you're out exercising? No, but to say that, you have to be in social distancing, that means you have to sit at home watching Netflix, that is not what happens. That is not what we should be doing.
And you know, in a case where the press could do good in cases like this, they start bringing up these studies where they had a study that was done for the purposes of athletes learning how to or how not to have people draft off of them when they're running and you know, packs for racing, both for cycling and for, you know, distance running, and how far like the aerosol droplets of their breath go. And it's like, okay, that was really scaring people to say, if you're exercising, you can't get within, you know, it's not 6 feet, it's like 25 feet, you know, and I was like, you know, okay, me being, I'm an outside student of medicine, because I read a lot of the stuff that you recommend to me, and I do it on my own because the information is there. But it's like, okay, you think about somebody who's going to be running on a trail you know, what's the likelihood, even if they have the disease, that they have enough high concentration of the virus that if you're 15 feet behind them and with the wind blowing and gravity, you know, impacting the virus's ability to, you know, get into your respiratory system, it's like, okay, I think I'll take my chances and get some vitamin D and some cardio exercise, you know, versus just sitting in my house and watching Netflix and eating ice cream. You know, it's like, I don't know of one case that's been, you know, person to person contact outside doing exercise. I mean, you think about all the different conditions that have to be perfect. Like you'd have to, you know, they would probably have to cough or sneeze large droplets that that shower down upon you. Yeah. And so I was like, they're scaring people to not want to exercise or be 25 feet behind them. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, do something that's going to be a benefit, not scare people into, you know, staying in their basement, you know? So,
which raises another angle to this. I wanted to mention the traditional theme that we've heard is social distancing, vaccines, basically shut everything down, keep people away. And one of the things that would also help in this scenario would be to boost the health of the population. Okay. So in this situation, we're telling people to stay indoors, you know, don't be around other people. Well, there's a few statistics out there that people should know. One, you have to have vitamin D. If you don't have good vitamin D, you're going to have a weak immune system. It's one of the precursors to poor immune function. Well, vitamin D is, we get that from the sun primarily. Fresh air, as we talked about in the animal model and mentioned that I gave, that, you know, if you coop animals up and they don't have fresh air, they will get diseased. Same thing goes for humans. Another one that's really subtle. Social isolation has a severe effect on immune function. That is something that a lot of people don't realize, that this social isolation is more damaging to the immune system than many, many other factors. My case that I'm trying to make is that we should be looking at the things that boost immunity to the population, even to the folks that are at risk. And we talked about some of them already, nutrition. We've talked about folks being physically active because that boosts immunity. What about vitamins? Did you know that vitamin A, vitamin D, zinc as a mineral, zinc has a class A recommendation for medical, you know, research that it's beneficial for reducing replication of viruses. Class A is as good as it gets.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, 13 randomized trials. So the point I'm making is, you're already seeing, you know, I don't watch, I media fast. I don't really watch the media like most people would traditionally do. I do download 2-minute like blurb from BBC News, from, you know, from Fox News, CNN, that type of thing. I'll do a 2-minute blurb of alternating every other day, where I listen to just to get the basics. And what's interesting is, because I'm away from the media, I actually hear sort of all the angles that they're trying, the story they're trying to tell. And now they're starting to, you know, not talking about really the virus anymore. They're talking about the who's to blame now. They're now like, those guys didn't act soon enough. And it's the political, and it's the doctor that's in charge, and he didn't know what he was doing. And they're starting to hack each other. But I've heard a few doctors coming out of the woodwork, and it's starting to make me understand that there's a whole nother angle to this. There's a whole group of doctors that are looking at this going, why are we doing any of this? Why aren't we boosting immunity? Why aren't we telling people a story of, why don't we do vitamins? Why don't we do nutrition? Why don't we do physical activity? Why don't we boost in the immunity of our population? And I think we'll have better outcomes. Just like you said, the obesity thing. I mean, that's a fact. And it's driven by lifestyle. It's not fat shaming. It's just a fact. It's unhealthy to have high insulin levels, which is why people are overweight.
And I was going to say, it's same thing when it comes to politics. I mean, you know, the glass half empty sells a lot more than the glass half full, right? Sure. They want body counts. They want smoking guns. They want somebody to blame because it has a better headline. You know, they want to tell the story about, you know, the healthcare worker that, you know, was overworked and died alone of COVID-19 in the basement, you know, there was a Stanford, I think he works at Stanford Medical School. I may look his name up because it'd be worth it. And then the show notes for this episode today is, he said, you know, think about if, You know, you look at cancer, or you look at heart disease, or even the seasonal flu. Think about every single human interest death when it comes to cancer, heart disease, seasonal flu. If we were hunting for, you know, these heart-wrenching cases in any of those, you know, major swim lanes of deaths every year, you know, for the last 100 years plus, you know, think about what that would look like on TV. So, you know, he wasn't trying to make light of it, that some of these steps we're taking, you know, aren't necessary, but he was like, you know, come on, we have to, you know, get out of our own way and look at the facts. And I think he was one of the proponents saying, hey, you have to selectively reopen the economy. You know, you talked about in South Texas, you know, places that don't have big international airports, that don't typically have a lot of traffic in and out of there for tourism or, you know, gaming or other things. It's like the likelihood that fully opening up the economy in those areas is going to cause a spike in COVID-19 is almost not there. You know, the numbers just do not support it. And they talk right about, you know, countries like Sweden that didn't do a lot of these. I know somebody that, you know, works, and, you know, for a defense contractor that's been posting a lot of things. She's in the Netherlands, and they haven't, you know, done a lot of the things that have been done here. And if you think about, I know the governor of South Dakota has been, you know, really open about things. And it's like, I think given a one size fits all approach, you know, thinking everybody's going to be like New York City is just ridiculous, you know. And I hope that, you know, we don't make rash decisions, but I think, you know, you have to look at the facts, not just the sexy human interest stories, you know.
So. Yeah, and I try to put a positive spin on it with my patients to help them understand that if you take care of your health, if you eat a low glycemic, low sugar diet, you try to be physically active, you get sunshine, maybe take some zinc, maybe take a probiotic. Mm-hmm. If you try to focus on maintaining your health, the likelihood is it's far more likely that you're going to survive if you get COVID-19. Far more likely. True for everyone. But the thing about it is, that's not the you hear the negative numbers, but the reality is hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people have already had this and are well. I think, and this is just me, my one man's opinion, I think that what we're going to see is when they start testing larger populations of people for have you had it before, you're going to find that probably a fairly significant percentage of people were already exposed to COVID-19, never got sick, and the numbers of people that die that were actually exposed to it will be significantly lower percentage-wise. Listen, I don't want to be the guy that's like everybody thinks, oh, you're not, what about all these thousands of people? I feel for that. I'm not ignorant to the fact that people have died from this illness, but there's a lot of unhealthy people out there too. And it's mostly claiming folks that have health issues that are, you know, were already a problem. And so I just, my thing, I'm trying to be positive with my patients is to say, look, focus on what you can control. That's what a Stoic would do. Focus on what you can manage. It doesn't help to be freaking out all the time and stressed and watching news cycles 24/7. Go outside, be physically active, stay away from people, fine. Hand washing, yes. Wear a mask. You know, I mean, I went to Walmart yesterday and I was like one of five people wearing a mask. Everybody else there was, you know, whatever. Life goes on. Walmart's strong.
We're not going to get fully into it, but one of the things I, you know, pulled out one of my favorite Stoic books, knowing we may talk about it a little bit today. And one of the things that's a common theme in Stoicism is controlling what you can and don't worry about what you can't control. You know, and one of the quotes in this case from Epictetus said, you know, some things are in our control, but while others are not, we control our opinion, choice, desire, aversion, and in a word, everything of our own doing. You know, and some kind of reflection on that might be, you know, remember when you're trying to, you know, extend, you know, what you can control or extend your reach mentally or physically outward, there's, you know, like you were talking about in this COVID-19 situation, it's much better and really more appropriate to direct all that inward, you know, saying that, you know, you have a lot more power in controlling the things that are within your reach versus worrying about what you see on TV that's like fully out of your control. And it's just going to, like you said, Doc, a lot of people having, you know, unwarranted anxiety, especially where you're at, you know, the fact right. that, you know, you probably have a better chance to get crapped on by a seagull or get stung by a jellyfish in South Texas than getting COVID-19, you know? So.
Yep. Right. And that can change. And I think, you know, our medical community, and I know my team, we're all on, you know, we're doing the best we can to be vigilant, and we don't want to expose anybody unnecessarily. And maybe we will have a spike, and, you know, but it just seems like, at some point, we have to look at the other side of that treatment coin, it's okay for healthy people to be exposed to a virus as long as they're taking care of their health. And, you know, I know that may not be a very popular opinion, but there's docs way smarter than me that are suggesting the same thing, that it's base immunity that's the biggest issue we're running into with this particular virus.
Yeah, I think one of the other things that you and I were tossing around back and forth before we started recording is just about, you know, our kids, you know, schedules and routines. And I think that, you know, early on the first week, I think was before my kids' spring break. And so we slow rolled our way into it. I think the school was playing damage control. So there wasn't, a lot of, hardwired stuff. And so we kind of let them, you know, go a little bit in summer mode, like, you know, stay up a little bit later and get up later. And as long as you, you know, got online and did, you know, if you check in the box, you were good. But as we realized this was going to go on longer, my wife was really good about, she shifted it a little bit, but had a schedule where, hey, you know, regardless, you have to get up by this time, you know, and then we'll give you about 30 minutes to wake up, get some food in your body, and then, you know, start the classes of the day. And then we had built in time for some exercise or, you know, recreation time, had some chores built in there. So I think it's important. And I think our kids have started to bicker less and get back into the, hey, this is normalcy now, after we, you know, not being tyrants, but just adding some structure to it. Cause you know, people, especially kids, even though they gripe about it, you need some structure in there to keep things sane.
Yeah. That was kind of the advice a couple weeks ago, Dr. Sarah Perry gave us. You know, she was our business, professor that was an expert in a remote work, you know, and all the, you know, kind of things that go along with that. And one of the things she mentioned was schedules. Gotta keep a schedule. I think that's super important, both for us personally, when it comes to fitness schedule, when it comes to our nutrition, things like that. And what we're seeing, you know, is it's equally true for the kids. They just can't go willy nilly all day long. They've got to have a routine. And even though it seems a little bit, you know, like we're pressing them a little bit, I know I feel like I'm following my kids around. Okay, homework's done. You know, what's next? Have we done the workout yet? You know, we're kind of pressing them through the day. But for the most part, they're also, like you said, they're falling into a routine. And I think we're all, you know, finding a new normal there.
Yeah, I think sometimes when we're in normal state of things, technology can be complete pain in the ass, but I think I realized that there's a lot of, both for social and for work collaboration, resources like Zoom or even simple FaceTime, Facebook Messenger with video, a lot of these things that people use to waste time, both for kids and school and work, are things that are making this, I know for me, a lot easier than it could be without them, you know,
right.
And I know you've talked about telemedicine, things like that.
Right.
But there's ways to stay connected in a good way.
Well, on a slight pivot, it's kind of a little bit of a random show. We're covering a lot of COVID stuff and stuff like that. But I found an article in Nature that I wanted to talk about, see what your take was on this. It was kind of cool. They have apps now where they are tracking, they're basically putting these apps out as when people have had COVID-19, they give people this app and they're able to fill out their symptoms. So it's like a collection, you know, collects symptoms and it tracks symptoms. Mm-hmm. What was interesting is on April 7th, there was something out on this app. What's the name of this thing here? It's called Open Access Plan S, I think is what they call it, Plan S. At any rate, what they did is they collected data from several hundred people that had COVID-19, and it came up with something like 60% of app users who tested positive for COVID-19 also had reported the loss of smell. So it was kind of cool to me that they're using this data collection device. This is like cutting edge, you know, modern medicine here, where we're looking at populations and they're able to show these graphs of what kind of symptoms, you know, most people will fall under. So it's like this overlapping ellipsis graph, if you will, showing where all the different symptoms are, like runny nose, cough, shortness of breath, fever, things like that. And it was interesting to see that there was this spike, this tall spike of overlapping symptoms that included anosmia, which means loss of smell. So I don't know if I'm more interested in the idea of, like, okay, this virus seems to have a collection of symptoms, including loss of smell, or I'm interested in the technology that they're using to sort of get down into the weeds with this data.
Yeah, I think it's a good example, though, of, you know, what I was talking about is there's plenty of things to be, I think, anxious about, wondering what's going to happen with the economy and jobs in certain sectors. But like I said, I mean, you think about when this happened essentially 100 years ago, right, before the internet, before really television, you might have radio, but I can't imagine being stuck in a house with kids that can't go to school and you're really worried about plague, essentially, and then you have no outlets like this, right? So right. I think that whether it be reporting symptoms so other people can, you know, be wary and self-quarantine or collaborate, or even every Friday, you know, the military people that I work with that we've all been, you know, forced into telework, we have an epic, you know, 2 to 3 hour Zoom call where we have had like kind of like a virtual happy hour, that's, you know, not safe for, you know, not safe for work definitely. But, it's funny. I did it on a whim. You know, I got a, invitation that said, hey, you know, here's, you can use Zoom for free and do calls up to 30 or 40 minutes. And we did the first one, and I had to restart it like 3 or 4 times, and because we kept, you know, go 30 minutes over, 30 minutes over. I was like, good Lord. So I finally got, you know, the most basic paid account so I can, you know, have up to 20 people over there on there without a time limit. And I think right. that, you know, I can only imagine what our mental health would be like without those resources. So, you know, I know it's been good for me, and I would just encourage people. Even I had my, you know, one of my older sisters who's not the, you know, the most tech savvy, and she's a teacher, you know, there at the high school where we went, and, you know, we did a Zoom call with her. She had never, you know, used it, did anything with it. I just told her, I was like, hey, click this link. You tell me if you want to email or cell phone. And, you know, she was able to get on there. And so I would just tell people to get out of their comfort zone, especially if you're feeling isolated. Like you said, you know, Doc, that it's not good for your immune system. It's not good for your mental or physical health if you just, you know, stay too isolated during this time we're dealing with right now.
Yeah, check for sure. So a couple of thoughts. You mentioned Jerome Dixon. I'd be interested to see what he I mean, you interact with him some too, right? And yeah, we did an episode with him on all the stats and everything. What's he's been saying about all this data flowing in? Any thoughts on any of that?
Well, it goes along the lines of what you were saying, is that he really thinks that when this is all said and done, initially we thought, oh, wow, this is like 10 times more deadly than the seasonal flu. But some, you know, data he's looking at from Germany and other, you know, pockets that have kind of peaked and then gone down, like in the Seattle area. And even so, it really seems like, you know, we're looking at mortality rates well under 1%. And then when we start doing the antibody tests, like you mentioned, it's probably going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 0.5% or lower. And right. I think it is a lot more communicable. And so there is concern with that if you don't do some form of what we already have done with the social distancing, because it is like, you know, it appears it's like, you know, obviously the data is still being collected, but 5 to 10 times more, you know, communicable than, you know, the seasonal flu.
Sure.
That you can, you know, it's still that target population we're talking about. You know, do you have other diseases of inflammation? You know, do you have COPD? Are you elderly? Are you obese? You know, that is the concern. But yeah, the data he's showing is already, you know, tipping towards like, hey, this is, you know, probably not as deadly, probably not as big of a deal. But until we get a vaccine, you know, until we get some like known approved therapies, that are all in line with each other. We are in limbo a little bit, so but
it looks good better luck with than that. It seems like everybody's arguing about that and back and forth, but yeah, it's coming. I guess as we get close to the end here, I was thinking about titles for this show. It was definitely random. We're definitely covered COVID-19 in detail, both from the family and the kids, some hardcore thoughts on the medical aspects of it. And I love the fact that we sprinkled a little Stoic philosophy in there. I wanted to mention a couple of things that might be helpful in the future. By the time this episode is aired, I will have a group or a tribe, I call them, on a website called the Future Focus Health Network. I'm going to have a group specific life podcast. And the reason I want to emphasize that is because I would like for us to have a community area where folks that follow this podcast can communicate with you and I, and also a place where we can put exclusive content for people that really like following our show. Because there's a lot of things I do. You know, we have talked about how we don't really make this a medical podcast, even though I'm a doctor. You know, it's not really the total emphasis of our show, but there's a lot of people that this is very important to. And I wanted to let people know that there's a lot of content that I've put out over the years, and that I want to make a place where the WFO podcast listeners can go and have a community that share content around these ideas. We could even do some live events there, Chris. You were just talking about Zoom and other, you know, platforms like that. There's ways that we can set up sort of live meetups for people that like this podcast. I thought that would be something fun to do in the coming weeks, maybe. But first things first would be to introduce people to the idea of the Future Focus Health Network, which is sort of a community dedicated to health, fitness, nutrition, lifestyle, and human performance. So I'll put that link in the show notes. Anybody that's interested in that, feel free to log in there and, you know, check out the articles and different topics we have. Check out the different forums and groups that we have. And by all means, if you like the WFO Life podcast, make sure you make yourself known in the WFO Life podcast tribe. That way we can communicate. So I hope that makes sense. And I think there'd be a lot of kind of another level, you know, where what episode are we on now? It's like 37 or
something. Yeah, like we're pushing 40. So
we're pushing 40 straight episodes.
Yeah, we're going to have a party when we get to the 52nd one, you know, full year worth of episodes.
Exactly. So I'm thinking that maybe that'll be kind of the next level of connection with our listeners and possibly a guest as well. That would be kind of fun to do like a live, you know, guest thing, or, you know, I just think there's a lot of possibilities out there. So if anybody's interested in that, please leave us a comment. Definitely if you're listening by iTunes or Stitchers or any other interweb things, please leave us a, you know, comment or review. Apparently that helps get, you know, our content out to more people, and we certainly appreciate that. Chris, you got any final thoughts this afternoon?
No, I'll just maybe just encourage people to, you know, use this time however you can for some type of, you know, good. And whether that be something that, you know, you've been wanting to get to that you haven't had the time because you're always coming and going, you know, connect with your family, you know, read and you know, invest in yourself. So that way you don't come out of this as a shell of what you once were. You come out of it with, you know, being a little bit stronger mentally and physically, and then be able to, you know, easily withstand something like this or more in the future.
Yeah. Excellent. I think it's great advice, and I guess we'll call it an afternoon. And this has been the WFO Life podcast. Have a great day, Chris.
Thanks.